Welcome to the Gooder Podcast, where we talk with powerhouse women in CPG about their journeys to success. This episode is sponsored by Retail Voodoo, a brand development firm guiding mission-driven consumer brands to attract new and passionate consumer base, crush their categories through growth and innovation, and magnify their social and environmental impact. If your brand is in need of brand positioning, package design, or marketing activation, we are here to help. You can find more information at www.retail-voodoo.com.
Hi, Diana Frike here. I am the host of the Gooder Podcast, where I get to talk with the powerhouse women in the food, beverage, and wellness categories about their journeys to success and their insights on the industry. Thanks for joining us today. Really quick, this episode is brought to you by Retail Voodoo. Retail Voodoo is a brand development firm. Our clients include Starbucks, Kind, REI, PepsiCo, Hi-Key, and many other market leaders. We provide strategic brand and design services for these brands in food, wellness, and beverage. If your goal is to increase market share, drive growth, or disrupt marketplace with new and innovative ideas, give us a call and let's talk. You can find us at retail-voodoo, that's VOODOO.com. Now, to the fun stuff. Today, I am excited to introduce Miss Amy Friedlander Hoffman. Amy has spent her career making sense of radically changing industries. She is currently the chief business officer for Liquid Death Mountain Water. I'm going to put quotes just because you guys are so fun. The fast growing beverage brand packaging water in infinitely recyclable tallboy cans, overseeing sales, marketing, merchandising, development for commercial strategies, and business development for all brand partnerships. So one busy human. Okay. Prior to Liquid Death, Amy spent 5 years at Uber, most recently as the head of business for brand, where she oversaw 150 partnerships across entertainment, music, sports, venues, community, and brand, purposeful to improve the customer experience and earning her spot on Billboard's top branding power players. Amy's resume includes an impressive list of media and telecom brands that we just might touch on later today. But for now, we get to say hello. Hello, Amy. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. And you're calling from an escape room in Santa Monica today. Is that right? Am I understanding correctly?
Pretty close. Yeah. I'm actually calling from our new offices that are in the kind of border of Venice and Culver City. So that is where I am.
Okay. I was just down in Santa Monica a couple of weeks ago for Nosh Live. I call it home because I was literally born in Santa Monica.
That's my real home.
Pardon?
St. John's?
No. I should check. I'm assuming yes, but I'm not sure. All I know is the story that my parents tell me that my mom was in labor. We were living in, they were living in La Mirada at the time. And decided to have me in Santa Monica of all places, you know, drive all the way across. Sure. He was driving down a one-way street the wrong way. The cops had to escort them to the hospital. That's the extent of my knowledge of the situation. So there you go.
Busted by the police before you even started.
This explains a lot right there. I'm just saying. Okay. Okay. Well, hey, let's talk a little bit about, we want to hear all about you. We want to start with Liquid Death Mountain Water. Tell us about the brand and why does it exist?
Yeah. Liquid Death is absolutely the most fun I've ever had, I think, in any job, at least thus far. Liquid Death is, you know, the whole concept of Liquid Death really was, why are only, you know, sodas and energy drinks, you know, and candy get to have all the fun? So right. It's the idea of taking something that's healthy, making it 50 times more fun, and something that people enjoy drinking. So, you know, there was, I think, a really huge kind of hole in the market where anything that was healthy kind of is pink and blue and looks like it's marketed to yoga moms. Yep. And we live in a world where it's, you know, everyone is, you know, from, you know, Jay-Z being vegan to, you know, people drinking less and being sober and all of these sort of movements for people being healthy that really everything healthy was only marketed in one way. So the idea was really to turn that on its head and make it, you know, super fun to drink water.
Yeah. It's the truth. I think millennials started kind of, I think, accelerated that whole water look and feel that from a consumer standpoint. But I think Gen Z has really allowed us to get more playful and less serious about ourselves. I think the beverage industry in particular, but food and beverage in the better for you space, we take ourselves pretty dang seriously. Even when we're having fun, we're serious. And what I just love about Liquid Death is it's kind of turning having fun and poking fun at itself in the industry and the category in a much different way. You're absolutely serious about what you're doing, but you're saying, we're going to do it this way. We're going to throw all the tropes out the door and we're going to start over and we're going to do it this way. And I just love it. You know, I took a peek at Mike Cesario's, did I say his last name correctly?
Yeah, Cesario, yeah.
Yeah, his bio, right? He's an agency guy. The creative clearly comes from him. And I don't know exactly who his co-founder was, but I mean, you can see that's where the genesis of all of this. You're fairly new to the brand, joining earlier here in 2021. Talk about what was the brand opportunity that brought you here? What happened in that moment of in time?
Yeah, I mean, I had been introduced to Mike actually almost a year ago now, and we had been talking about me advising. So I actually came in to advise the company originally. Oh. They were working on actually having some beginning conversations with Live Nation, which we can talk about. And I have worked with them a ton in the past. And so I agreed to come in as an advisor. And then after like a month, I was like, I'm in. Like, I love it. Mike is just a wonderful guy. And JR, who's the co-founder.
JR, okay.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, Mike is an absolutely brilliant creative. And really, you know, talk about the brand, right? In some ways, he has a new daughter named Charlotte, but this is his first baby. And I really appreciated the way he thought about the brand as entertainment, almost as a character, right? Where he thinks about it kind of as like, you know, a WWE character. And what would this character and this brand be? And the other part that I really appreciated about it was that it was done. It's all rooted in comedy, right? The whole thing is about making fun and making fun of marketing. But doing it in a positive way. Like, it was very early on, someone showed us a picture and they had sort of like marked up other brands as other names and, you know, like Coors, Boar and all these things. And he was like, you know what? Yeah, no, like, we don't make fun of others.
Right.
Like, we're about making fun of ourselves.
Yes.
And that really resonated with me as well, because it's like all really done, you know, it's kind of subversive and funny, but all done in a very positive way.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And now I want to touch on this for just a moment, because this could be me, but maybe you can validate this or not. But I feel like the brand was very mission-centric. I kind of got the comedy. I got the turning it on its head. But I feel like it's just been in the last maybe year, maybe less than a year, where I feel like bunch of things snapped to grid and now we're a legit CPG company. And like I said, it could just be me, but I feel like a lot of foundational principles went into place and everything seems to be firing in the same direction. Am I seeing that correctly?
I certainly hope so. That's been the goal, right? And you know, I think another important part, right? And I think a lot of people, and I was one included, it's like when I started talking to Mike, it's like you see Liquid Death and I'm like, death, like, I'm a sunshine and rainbows girl, right? Like, I'm, you know, I don't wear things with skulls, right? Like, I don't know that I get it. And then when you get into it and you realize two things, one, as we're saying, it's just funny and everything is rooted in humor and comedy. Yeah. And two, that it's about death to plastic. And that's sort
there
of
you
the
go.
Other piece of the, that's part of the Liquid Death. And that's, you know, really, we're a mission driven company and we can have that impact even more so because people are enjoying it. And it's not like you're just telling them to do good and thus they will, because people generally don't operate that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I do feel like the last year has really been firing on all cylinders for us. So we have really aligned from the mission perspective, from, you know, the comedy hits, right? And continuing to show up in different ways and in very different ways to sort of drive that message home and entertain people. And then from a retail perspective as well, we started off as a D2C business and started sales in 2019, only D2C. Not surprisingly, water is very heavy. And so knowing that, we still have a big and growing D2C business. And now actually moving forward, now with Amazon, where that continues to grow even more so. But the retail business, really, we started and went into stores in spring of 2020. Started first retail partnerships with Whole Foods and 7-Eleven. And we just continued to grow, you know, from the retail side from there. Mm-hmm. And both sides, but that's been a huge part of it.
Mm-hmm. I would say that this is, I am the sole grocery shopper in my family, which would be no surprise. It makes it kind of a challenge when you're in CPG and you grocery shop. So I live in the city and I have about 7 different grocery stores, local and national. And I actually each time I shop, I go to a different location so I can watch what's happening on the shelves. And it's so fun to watch a brand like Liquid Death go from like Kroger to, oh, now you're into like the local shelves. You're in at the level. Sometimes it goes the other way around, but with you guys, it came from bigger to smaller. And that's been fun to watch. Let's talk about this a little bit further. Now we mentioned the intro that you came from Uber. Yeah. You came from, kind of digital and, not digital, but kind of tech industry and digital industry. I want to talk a little bit about the transition from where you were to CPG, because many employers, brands that we work with, sometimes people who are networking with me are always, I'm looking for staff. Do you know anybody with 240 years of experience in beverage that can help us turn our business around and be disruptive? So my question for you is, how did that dialogue go with you guys? Was it fluid, or was it that time together that you had ahead of time where you guys got real comfortable with each other and that made that transition early or easy? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think it was sort of twofold. I can speak from my side and then from Mike's perspective. Mm-hmm. For me, it's always about doing something that hasn't been done before. Like that's what gets me excited and up in the morning. And so I had started my career, as we were talking about, in media, and I worked for AT for a first video on demand company and for AT&T, and then had the opportunity to go to Uber. And that was like, you know, the first time you open the Uber app and hit the button was, you know, magic.
Yes.
So I was super excited to go and now work in transportation. And then, you know, for me, it's always about learning something new. So the idea that I was going to now go do CPG was super exciting, because I'm like, I don't know anything about CPG. So I was really excited to learn about it. And then from Mike's perspective, I think, you know, as a company, and what we've seen early on was almost more tech-like. I mean, we have, you know, it's in the sense of like from a growth perspective and from people's love for the brand. And so I think he had a comfort level, you know, in the kind of growth that we were having, the company was having, that this was maybe not your normal traditional kind of CPG company. And he wanted it to be not, right, the absolute opposite of that, right? Like we want to do things differently. We want to, you know, disrupt. So I think from a background perspective, and particularly from my time at Uber, he was very excited by and comfortable with the fact that not only would I come from a world of disruption, but came from a world of high, you know, fast-paced, high growth.
Gotcha.
And kind of what you think more from a tech perspective. And, you know, it's probably one of the biggest things for me here. And I don't think people are sick of me saying it, but I'm always like faster, faster, you know, like this is the thing that keeps me up at night. Right. It's like, we got to move.
Oh, well, and that's the challenge when we were talking about something like a tech to a CPG brand where manufacturing and fulfillment are involved. You can't have those overnight, like you can't wake up tomorrow morning and have a new anything.
Yes.
The way you can, other than a platform changes, that sort of thing. So I bet there probably is still some learning for you there, and just kind of getting comfortable with the pace and how far can you push until it's not realistic type of thing.
No, that's absolutely right. And it's, and in fact, you know, Sean, who runs sales for us, was like, you know, talking about, you know, resets, right, in water that happen.
Oh my gosh.
Once a year. And you're right? Like, what do you mean once a year? You know, I mean, like, how could that be? And not only, you know, the meeting is in, you know, July,
right,
or, you know, to go on shelf, you know, 9 months later. I mean, but literally it's like a year and a half, right, cycle to actually move things on shelf. And so that is new.
And right.
And so then it becomes the question of, okay, well then how do you surround that? Like, I have no question in this coming year, you'll see us continue to expand, in both in major retailers and in the number of stores. And, you know, moving from, you know, hunting license to planogrammed and, you know, moving on with other things.
Yeah.
And so and I think we're now in about 27,000 doors overall, but that's where then you also have to, as you said, go get to the locals. You know, this is a very, and in some ways, actually it's been, very similar to Uber early years.
Really?
Yes. In the sense that it's a lot of it is, it's, it happens in two ways. In one way, it's boots on the ground. Right.
So okay.
We have, you know, amazing folks in sales who are out there talking to the general managers and helping unload a case and literally, you know, stocking shelves, right? And getting things into the coolers. And that's, it's really a kind of hand-to-hand combat in that way, in a very boots on the ground thing, where Uber was the same way. Whenever we would go into a new city, we would have at least a minimum of three people, and you'd have a launcher and you would have someone to run out, someone that ran marketing. And so every time, and it was sort of a concentrated push and effort
to
get that growth going in the city. And then it would sort of, the flywheel would start and it would sort of work on its own.
Right.
So I've actually found a lot of similarities. And then on that, so that's kind of like the base, like kind of boots on the ground level. And then on the flip side, it becomes the marketing side and creating attention and awareness. Right. And those are the things that we've been focused on with the brand that we can control, right?
Yeah.
And be able to push the awareness and sort of, we talk about it being, it's awareness, but it's also the idea that for us, it's about being in the cultural zeitgeist, right?
Yeah.
Like that's really what Liquid Death is about. That's what Uber was about. Uber was utility. I mean,
yes.
This is water, you know, it's universal, but you know, it's not going to change your life. But it is, you know, something that is necessary for your life.
Yeah.
So that's the other part, is really then looking at it from how do we kind of become, really be engaged in culture and responsive and in part of it.
Well, I love what you're saying there. I know that Uber is utilitarian, but in some ways Uber has its own cultural zeitgeist as well. I mean, it's not like quite ubiquitous, like a using the term Band-Aid for anything that works like a Band-Aid, but almost there. Yeah. Like it's its own culture. Uber changed the way we look at transportation and use technology in a completely different way. So I don't see them as dissimilar. Just Uber is now so much more established. Isn't that weird to say? It's an established brand, where Liquid Death is still in its infancy for the most part in regards to market penetration. So I think I get the similarities. I see the connections there, and how awesome it is for the founders to be able to go, to be able to think that way. That says a lot about what's possible with Liquid Death, because I think oftentimes founder owners can have a lot of fear. Sometimes it's babies. Sometimes they're afraid of money. They're afraid of mistakes. I mean, making mistakes, there's fear for all sorts of things, and I can't blame them. Right. I mean, I have my own agency and I understand wanting to maintain profitability and all of those things, but to be able to have the foresight to go, this is the way to go, and feel confident enough to just go at it and hire according to the need of the brand, and not just to check the box or to fill the role, is really says a lot about how that organization and the brand thinks. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, it does. And I'm grateful and appreciate the way Mike thinks about things, right? Where he is very open, you know, to sort of whether it's, you know, I mean, again, from the creative side, he's
absolutely for sure.
Brilliant. And from the business side, like he has a very pragmatic way of seeing kind of what's important, and is open and wants to think big, right, about it, you know? And so, and in fact, you know, we've had, you know, situation, the worst thing that could happen to us, right, is that we run out of product. Like we don't, you know, that we haven't ordered enough. And so everything is really pushing and pushing the company to think, you know, let's assume that we're going to hit the biggest numbers that we possibly can. Like the one thing that would kill us is if we didn't have supply. Right.
Inventory.
And we're seeing that a ton now, right? I mean, because
are you?
Well, not for us, but with the supply chain shortages.
Yeah, that's true.
Aluminum shortages that are happening. Yeah. So, you know, we've been able to take advantage of a lot of the issues with other brands that haven't been able to stock the shelves. Yeah. And so, you know, retailers want things on those shelves and we have the product and and that's been kind of a defining factor for the company is like, we've never, you know, knock on wood, hopefully we'll continue to do it. We continue to, you know, surprise ourselves from a growth perspective.
Yeah.
And so it's really important that we are prepared for that, not only in making sure that we have that product, but in also thinking about things that we said differently, right? Like how, you know, and a lot of that does come from Uber, from my perspective, where it was like the business didn't exist.
Right.
We had to write the rules. And we did, we wrote a ton of them and it was like, that is possible. Right. And knowing that really kind of in that way, anything's possible allows us the freedom and flexibility, I think, to grow faster.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about those early days when you just joined the team. How did you set yourself up for the win and how did Liquid Death set themselves up for you to win as well? Cause it's definitely both sides.
Yeah. I mean, I would say one of the things that was sort of nice for me in that respect was we were having conversations with Live Nation. And so we now have a multi-year, very deep partnership with Live Nation.
Nice.
Where we're the, which is great. We're the exclusive still and sparkling water in over 100 venues and over 20 festivals a year. And with a very deep relationship between the two of us. And so, that was something when I came in that we were starting. So in one way, it's nice to come into a role and be like, okay, I know what my first 90 days, at least one of the major things that has to happen, right, is this, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that was very good from setting it up. I would say one thing that we didn't do very well that took some time to readjust was we weren't very clear with respect to lines of reporting where it was like, hey,
interesting.
I'm coming in as chief business officer. And it was just sort of like on the side and it made it, I think somewhat more confusing for people.
Sure, choppy. Like,
we know this is what she's doing this part, but the overseeing everything else was more challenging. Mm-hmm. And at one point then I ended up, you know, going to Mike and be like, this structure doesn't work. We need to get clear reporting lines. We need to know that that these things all roll up into me and that I have that responsibility and then that clarified things. And I think helped move a lot forward in a way that it didn't. So I mean, it was interesting because there really were things where I felt like, oh yeah, that was set up for success. And then if I were to ever go on and do the next company, I would make sure that was very clear from the beginning because I'm very, I generally kind of roll with it. So it was sort of like, great. And Mike too, like, we're like, cool, we'll figure it out as we go, you know? And that was something now that I, you know, sort of as a learning that if I ever went and started new, I would be extremely clear from the beginning with respect to reporting structures and what needed to happen because we didn't lose time, but it just took a little bit of relearning in a way where it was like, hey, I'm here. BD is part of what I do, but I don't come in to run BD. I've come in to run the business.
Yeah.
And so we need to set that up accordingly.
Yeah.
We know that was the intent. So we got to make sure that the structure follows the strategy.
Well, that is not uncommon in entrepreneurial organizations. Yeah. You know, their strength is their weakness, their ability to be agile and to think. And sometimes we run fast and loose. We're like, okay, you know, I said it as an entrepreneur. I said it, I put it out in the universe. That means people understand it isn't necessarily true. And I think it's really great when somebody can come in and guide these owners into that kind of thinking, because that may not necessarily be a natural way for them to think. Yes. So it's great that you've got that tucked in your back pocket. And I would even offer that to those in the audience that are looking to move to, you know, from a more structured brand like your major big CPGs or another tech industry into a smaller organization is probably spend a little bit of effort putting some structures into place around it, not only reporting, but then also responsibilities underneath those reporting structures. And if that means you're on hire number five and hire number five has got 17 hats, that's cool, but let's define those hats, right?
Exactly. Yep, absolutely. And that's what's going to happen. And like, you know, we're in a stage, certainly as a company, we're starting to get somewhat more specialized, but not really. Like it's still a team full of athletes, right? And so, and then that's, you know, a lot of what you need in the early stages where, you know, and it's been interesting too, where we'll get, you know, advice from folks or advisors and some folks who are, you know, long-term CPG. And it's like, well, you need, you know, this kind of data analyst. And it was like, at some point, yes, you know, but we're like eight, you know, stories back here. We don't have 100 people who are doing this role. We have one. Now we're going to add two, right?
Right.
And so it's like, you know, kind of that crawl, walk, run, figuring out how you staff to make sure that we're fulfilling on those things. But
Yeah. Always. That's that gut instinct meeting understand or kind of gut instinct meeting research and what you're supposed to do with it. I think people, when they give advice, they're doing it in, you know, they're doing it as a favor, as a credibility play. I don't think anybody means it to be belittling in any singular way, but I think entrepreneurial organizations should not be 100% gut, but I think they should be at that like 60% gut where take a look at the data. But if the feedback, if you know, if you have somebody going buy $500,000 worth of data and that's going to put you in the red. You know, I'm of course exaggerating, but like, you know, use some brains around it a little bit and take the advice because the advice is good. It just might be practical in this moment.
Right. It's exactly. I mean, and you look at, you know, the product, I mean, Liquid Death, like nobody, if you had, you know, if you had surveyed people, you know, if you had asked for advice, wouldn't exist because you know, no one would go, wait, that's never going to work. No one, I mean, Mike heard that so much and, you know, again, such kudos to continuing to push through and knew he had something because so many, particularly those CPG meetings was like, no one will ever stock Liquid Death on a shelf. You know, like that was the advice. And now it's funny when we deal with larger partnerships are starting to, you know, sort of deal with big, you know, like hospitality and having that discussion with folks. And it's like, you know, hey, there's Death Wish coffee. You know, Kroger has Death by Chocolate.
Can you believe
You know, Killer Dave's Killer Bread. Like this is not totally new. And like, you know, I mean, but because it's packaged the way it is in such sort of a rock and roll way with a skull on it, people have that immediate reaction of like, oh God, you know, like, someone's going to be scared. And it's like, people get it. Like you got, we have to, we talk about that too, that, you know, we don't talk about people as, you know, consumers, like they're people and they're much smarter and they get it. And we're going to talk about them as people. And they understand that like, you're not going to die from drinking Liquid Death.
Let's be clear. Liquid Death is the perfect example of a brand ecosystem. Liquid Death, just the name, if you printed it, you know, in generic type or tried to put flowers in a palm tree on it and stick it on a shelf is not going to work. It is the entire ecosystem. It's your mission, vision, values, and the design system and knowing who your target audience is. I mean, yes, at the end of the day, you still have to sell product. Yes. So we have to look at consumers in one way, but yes, they are people, but we're not trying to sell Liquid Death to the people who drink smart water. You guys created a whole new audience, a group of people that were probably downing Mountain Dew and Gatorade, which nothing wrong with that, but you are now adjusting the this audience and bringing new people into the category in a way that that like it just really, it's just wonderful and surprising. I love it.
Yeah. And I think that's been really helpful. It's a lot of the messaging too from a, you know, two retailers, right? Is that where it's not just we're taking it from one water brand and moving it to another. It is that we're bringing in people that wouldn't necessarily have had a water. And they will, because they're drinking it in something that they actually feel good drinking. They like the taste and they feel good holding it.
That makes them look cool.
Exactly. And that's never, you know, we joke, like no one's ever going to say, why'd you buy that? You know, and no one's ever going to be like, because it makes me look cool. Like, you know, it's like the emotional connection that you have to it. And then it's mm-hmm. the intellectual connection of you're like, right. Oh, this is about Death to Plastic. And, right. You know, I feel good because they are, you know, putting a portion of their profits to right. killing plastic pollution, providing yep. drinking water for those that don't have it. So like, that's the, you know, the, say the justification, mm-hmm. but, you know, but more of it is like, cause it feels good and it looks cool. And you see it, you know, from, yes. you know, 60-year-old guys to kids, yes. where we're finding, we have so many parents that have written us and said, this is the only water my kid will drink because yeah. they like it. It's fun.
Yeah. My oldest daughter's graduation from college this summer, and I brought regular bottled water, mm-hmm. Brands that we've worked with in the past. And then I brought in a case of Liquid Death because of the age group.
Yeah.
And you could walk through the party and tell by age and, you know, who aligned with what. It was yeah. pretty great.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about this environmental activism component of the brand by way of kind of stepping back into your history a little bit. You originally kind of coming into the profession, you started out in law, right? Didn't you want to be a criminal defense attorney?
Yeah.
Prosecuting. I can't remember.
Defense. Criminal defense. I mean, I joke that I always wanted to be a lawyer till I got to law school, which is true. And criminal law, that is exactly what I wanted to do.
Yeah. So. This feels like it's going to be a reach, but I remember from when we prepped on this, like that there's a dotted line from how that, where you were then to how you got to where you are now. What's that guiding principle? And what was that aha moment that you had back then that said, I got to go in a different direction?
Yeah. I mean, I actually had an amazing experience in law school where there were two 11-year-olds that were accused of throwing a 5-year-old out the window in Chicago, in the projects in Chicago. And I went to University of Chicago for law, and we had the legal aid clinic. So we represented one of the two 11-year-olds. And it was, you know, like just an unbelievable, you know, experience, and one that I was thought, you know, like God bless the people that can get up and do this every day. Yeah. But for me, it was kind of too much. I was like, I'm too wrapped up, you know, 2 years of working on a case and with these kids. Mm-hmm. And so kind of, I think that was the first sort of knowing myself moment. And I was like, I don't think this is going to be it for me. And so, you know, but let me try corporate law. You know,
I moved. Try corporate. Let's go to the corporate side.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny. I went back, which was nice. Chicago asked me to come back and speak at an entrepreneurial thing. Yeah, which was really nice. But I was joking when I got up to speak, and it was the same thing, kind of talking about career. But I was like, you know, it was almost the whole point of the speech, which is like, you never know, being open to what life has to offer you and mm-hmm. kind of having a just do it mindset, even if you don't feel 100% comfortable that you know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, here I am coming back to speak about entrepreneurism, and I came to be a criminal attorney, right? So it's like, that's the whole point, you know, right? Just being open to it. So so I sort of had that thread, practiced corporate law, switched over to the business side of one of the earlier companies that I was with, because it felt, on the legal side, it felt about, the key was about how to protect downside risk. And yeah. on the business, that's your job, right? And yeah. like getting the deal done, but like making sure that if stuff goes wrong, like have you yeah. protected, you know, the company.
Right.
And for me, it felt kind of the opposite, that I was what I enjoyed and the strength was sort of, you know, deals and strategy and how do you make it go right? Like, what are the mm-hmm. things that you can do to put into place that where you, you know, hopefully you never look at the agreement, but you're creating something
right.
that's value for both people and you've created that relationship with people as mm-hmm. well. So that's kind of how I, you know, started on that path. And then it's just been about, as I said earlier, you know, even when I came here from Uber, I kind of narrowed it down to what I would call like the three P's, right? It's like, what's the problem? What am I going to get up and do every day and focus on? And am I excited about doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Number two is people. Like, mm-hmm. who am I doing this with? You know, you end up you know, as you know, right, when you're working hard, you spend, this is, becomes your family, right?
It becomes your family. That's truth. Yeah.
You see them more maybe than you see your own family at times.
Yes.
So who are the people, and am I excited, and do I like these people, and am I excited by, you know, being next to them and working with them? And then what's the potential? And that potential could be, you know, for fulfillment in what you're doing, whether that's doing good, whether from it's a financial perspective, like, you know, how do you feel about, you know, are you excited about the potential that it has? So I'd say, you know, those are really the things, you know, thematically that have through this kind of windy road and different industries, have always been there and really sort of articulated as the things that have guided me in figuring out what I want to do next.
Mm-hmm.
Got me to liquid death.
Now, I feel like there were a couple of touch points around social justice and environmentalism, yep, that were in that path that seemed to be really giving you some like you're able to express it even more so here at Liquid Death, but that there were those elements along the way. Were those contributing factors in going to Liquid Death, or is that just kind of free with purchase bonus?
No, I was definitely a part of it too. So I had gotten, I've been on the board of Los Angeles Waterkeeper for the past 10 years. It's been a while. And LA Waterkeeper is the organization that protects our rivers and oceans, all of the water sources, you know, for Los Angeles, and with, you know, drinkable, swimmable, fishable, clean water. So, which has become a huge issue, right? When you think about where we're going forward, and it's like the ability to have good water sources, you know, whether we were dealing with the drought issues,
right,
or whether we're dealing with oil spills, right? It's like that is kind of ultimately what, you know, what makes us survive.
Right.
And so I've been on the board for many years. And so then Liquid Death ended up really feeling like a perfect fit in that, because it was a way, as I said before, like, you know, and I've seen this a lot, certainly from the nonprofit side, where, you know, telling people they should do something is actually because it's good for them, or particularly good for the planet, is generally not that effective. People are self-interested and they do because they enjoy it, because it has meaning to them. So one of the things that I've loved and really contributed to me coming here was the idea that the impact that we could have, or that I could have on a massive scale, right? It's like, you know, just take the Live Nation deal as an example. We'll, you know, go through, you know, what, 8 to 10 million bottles, or, you know, cans
that
would have been plastic bottles. So great. Now those are gone. Now you see others in the industry that have seen that deal, and whether it's us or somebody else, they're like, oh, okay, I guess I have to get serious about getting rid of single-use plastic.
Yes.
So great. There goes those bottles, you know? And so the more things, so I think from, I mean, frankly, you know, if I think about, you know, all of the bottles that, you know, the cans that we have sold, that somebody that would have purchased, you know, a single use plastic bottle that was not going to get recycled, and that was going to go in, you know, even talk about that, but like, even, you know, they talk about it's 8% of plastic at most ever gets recycled. And most of it is, it's just cheaper for them to buy, to create another bottle than it is to recycle. So it goes in a landfill. And it's, so the ability to really be able to affect that at a large scale now, by creating a product that people are excited to drink and prefer, and the benefit of that, that now gets plastic single, those single use plastic bottles out. Like, I really can't think of anything better that sort of aligns with it from a personal perspective on that way too.
Well, and to go back to the creative that comes out of Liquid Death, I think it, when we spoke, I had mentioned that I'd just seen some video or commercial that Hamid, am I saying his name correctly?
Possibly.
From your sales team posted on LinkedIn. And it was just this, it was something that was filmed on the beach, and it was, it was just so corny.
Done with the boys. It was, I think we did probably, it was the thing that we had done with, I think Hamid, who runs our e-com.
There we go.
It's exactly. Yes. We had done it in partnership with Amazon's show, The Boys. And so one of their characters, the Deep, who was kind of the, you know, the superhero, but not the greatest of superheroes, actually. Yes, we hired him and fired him as our chief sustainability officer.
Yes. It's so good. Oh my gosh. What is the name of that? If somebody wants to go and look that up right now, what's the, do you remember what the name of the campaign or the concept was? Do you remember?
I mean, if you Google Liquid Death and the Deep, or Liquid Death and the Boys, then that'll
and the Boys.
Up.
Okay.
The Boys.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the Amazon show that we did in conjunction.
Yeah. With. Yeah. Yeah. If you guys want to see how, I mean, anybody that knows Liquid Death, that's listening, you guys know Liquid Death, but if this is a new brand for you, just go and get inspired just for 3 minutes about how you can really shake up an industry, right? So yes. When we're talking about, so kind of let's full circle back here now, as we start coming in for kind of towards the end of our time here, let's talk about how we can coach or advise founder owners or any kind of, I mean, it could be anyone all the way up to Frito-Lay, PepsiCo. Like yeah. how do you look at shaking things up and, or how do I want to say this? How do you find the Amy Friedlanders of the world and get comfortable with the idea that we don't need to have people from the industry come in? What kind of advice do we give?
Yeah. I mean, I think it goes more to thinking about what's the skill set you need, right? Like, what are you looking to do? You know, is it looking to find somebody who really understands strategy or who understands, you know, e-com in a way, and it's not necessary. And then, you know, because so much of it from an industry perspective, it's, you know, it's learnings that you have from other industries. I mean, right. It's like whether, you know, it was doing, you know, if I worked for AT&T, right. And it's like looking at the subscription business. Right. And, you know, I helped them launch their television service. And then I ran the broadband programming and it's like, you know, entirely different industry, right.
Right.
The media side of things, but you have sort of understandings that you get from the way people think about that business,
mm-hmm.
You know, Uber, right. A completely different startup, yes. Transportation, you know, marketplace economy. So it's like, what are the similarities to what you have in your business that you are looking, you know, to change or to do? Like, what are the similarities related to how you sell your product or what, or, you know, whether it's, I'm looking to change something in marketing or, you know, this is an issue in, you know, sales or in product in a different way. And then thinking about what the industries are that might have either similar, again, it could be either similar business models, similar growth trajectories, thinking about things in a different way and being able to look at industries and being just open to the idea that, you know, I appreciate it certainly in the fact that, you know, we have plenty of people here who have been in CPG and in beverage and
you got to have it,
you know, and at Red Bull and all of these sort of brands
yes.
that have done those things. You have to have that too, right? The people that totally understand it. But having the perspective from something outside of the industry as well, if it's, you know, high growth and that's what you're looking for, you know, if it was, you know, changing a business model, doing those things, I think those are the kinds of things that I would focus on. Like, what are the things we're trying to solve for? And then what industries have done those similarly or companies within those industries that have done them similar? And then I would look from that perspective.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay, good. Good. Okay. So I'm really good for jumping around here. I'm going to jump back to something else that we talked about a little bit earlier. If you could wave your Amy magic wand, and as you're thinking about the water, beverage, and CPG industry, as you see it now, still somewhat new, you're not quite a year in, what do you wish brands could do either around hiring or environmental activism or the way they run their business? Or, you know, what would that magic wand be and what would you touch?
Yeah. I think that, well,
tough one, I know.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's so many different ways to think about it. I mean, it's, I think from the, you know, innovation perspective, right, that the ability to move, I mean, if I had magic wand, the ability to move quickly, right? The ability for a brand to be on shelf, to look at what sales were and then change that on a regular basis versus, again, a once a year reset or maybe they're not really doing a reset, you know? And it's like, you understand everybody's got those things, but it makes it tougher, I think, for brands to be able to move, to grow or to be able to find that market share when, you know, it feels I'll say like gatekeepers, right? This is, you know, this, yes, is their business, this is their retail business.
Yeah.
But that there's less of an ability to sort of move those things along faster.
Yeah.
So for sure, I would change that.
I could see that, you know, the ability to test and learn on a higher degree of frequency. I wonder if you could do that and still maintain profitability from an operational standpoint as a retailer. Like if you're switching things out and resetting, you know, right, 7 times a year, are you, right, maintaining profitability? Are you leaving product on shelf long enough to even know if it's going to be sticky?
Works. Right. Exactly.
All of those things.
Look, yeah. There's got to be a balance between, right, it, right? Right. And it says that and 7 times a year is probably too much, right? Exactly.
Yes.
But there's, right? But certain products that have been for a certain time, you,
yes,
give them space, you know, do you do it,
yes,
maybe 3 times, create an innovation, yeah, area, you know, do some things that, right, that gives,
yes,
gives brands the ability, because, you know, coming from businesses where growth happened much, would happen generally very quickly, right?
Yes.
And really, you know, still in this business where, mm-hmm, it's like, cool, our, you know, our awareness continues to grow. Certainly, yep, sales continue to grow.
Yeah.
But there is a gating factor with respect, yeah, to someone's got to be able to find it on the shelf.
Right? Yeah, yeah, absolutely. They, yeah, should have a, they, I'm going to do they.
The proverbial they.
Should, I'm wondering what it would be like if, let's brainstorm a solution here real quick. No, I'm just thinking like if you had somebody like a Kroger and they just had a section, they just had a certain amount of a certain slot size that was dedicated to just high turn in trial of a product rather than thinking of the whole section at a time,
yeah,
if that might be a really great way to just kind of, okay, every once a quarter, let's try something new in this slot, you know, and see, yeah, what happens. I wonder, instead of it looking at it like this big aggregate thing, like just dedicate a small amount. I wonder if that might be a valuable way to look at being able to help brands like yours kind of get in and just try it.
Yeah, it's exactly like that. Maybe the case, you know, and figuring out how to, right, how to do it, you know, smaller amounts in, yes, a section to be able to get, I mean, you know, the flip is obviously there's got to be enough, you know, as I'm learning about facings, right? And numbers,
right,
you know, right?
Yes.
All of that, right?
Yes.
And those are the things that you look to grow, right, over time.
Yeah.
But you might be able to get some really interesting information if, and I'm making, yeah, up, you know, you have an entire row for, yeah, X period of time and it's just,
yeah,
a smaller period of time, right? And,
yeah,
being able to understand,
right,
you know, right. And then, you know, the flip, but again, it's sort of like the things, yeah, that we've got from retail on in shelf. And then there's the awareness that the brand needs to,
yes,
get,
right? It's overall, all gonna go. Yeah. It's very systemic. You guys, from a facing standpoint, brand blocking, you could have 2 slots or 40 slots. I think you're just gonna be as impactful. But for those that have 13 SKUs and want to have half of their flavors or half of their product on shelf, that's a different situation. Again, that's a strategy. That's another episode. Join us again when Amy and I
we'll come back. We are about to come out with innovation the next few weeks. And
hey, so, okay. Yeah. Looking forward to that. I might have to make sure some of that ends up in the mail to me. We'll talk after we record.
That sounds good.
Well, Amy, I am really enjoying our conversation. Our time is almost up, but there are 3 questions that I like to ask every guest. So I'm going to go ahead and ask them of you right now. One is there some sort of interesting fact that you'd like to share about the industry, your product? It could be at a previous life. It could be in water, CPG, something that I like to call a happy hour fact, something I can take to my friends who are outside of the industry and go, did you know?
Right. Did you know that 77% of aluminum that has been in circulation since it was created is still around and gets recycled?
77?
77%.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Which is,
that is amazing. Yeah. Does it degrade after,
no,
it, during each?
It doesn't. That's the difference. It doesn't degrade. So the properties of aluminum, whether you, when you melt it down and you create another can, the properties stay the same.
Get so out.
Is still, yes.
And that's different than other metals. If I am, remember, I think stainless and other metals is not as flexible, but that could be, I don't know. That's, yeah, an old.
I do not know, but I, yeah, do know for aluminum, it's 77%.
Interesting. I love that.
Circulation and being recycled and reused.
Awesome. Are there any other women leaders or maybe even rising stars out there in our industry or not that you would like to just mention and elevate or simply admire for the work that they're doing? And if so, who and why?
Oh my gosh, there are certainly, I may have to, I'm like, now I'm so on the spot of who, how many great women that
I know that it's with, tricky. Right? Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would have to say, that is a tougher one. You know, I feel like I've actually, and maybe because I have watched her, but Marissa Bertha from 7-Eleven,
who's
sort of, someone that we have worked with, who I've been very impressed by, very engaged and very impressed by. So I would like, I say she would be a good one to shout out.
Okay. So somebody that we could just give a little shout out to. Nicely done.
Yes.
What brands and or trends do you have your eye on and why?
In CPG specifically or?
No, it could be in anything.
The biggest to me, the metaverse.
Really?
Truly. Yes.
Okay.
The metaverse. I mean, it is absolutely fascinating to me, you know, watching. So some of the stats that are interesting, over or just about 50% of all kids under 16 are on Roblox. 50% of all kids.
What's the percentage?
50. 50.
Wow.
50% of all kids 16 and under are on in the US are on Roblox.
Okay.
So when I look at where the world is going, and when you watch kids who don't really see the difference between a physical and a virtual good, uh-huh. that it's the same. And the other one stat that was so fascinating on that, I know it's over 50% as well. And I can't remember if it's even way more, change their skins, their avatars, what they're wearing every day. And so it's this, like, from a trend or concept of seeing an entire generation that's growing up with digital and physical being kind of interchangeable, that they take the same properties and thoughts with both of those things. You know, you're seeing, you know, virtual goods go for the same or higher price than the actual physical, because there's not much of a delineation. I mean, granted, those two worlds are different, but the thinking that it's any different in the real world versus the virtual world, they're spending as much time there as in the real world.
So
that is an area to me that I think we are just, you know,
tapping into.
Yeah, we're at the beginning of the first inning on that. And so when I look at things really future and on the horizon that I think are fascinating, a little scary, I mean, in a way, because I'm a, you know, I would say one of the things, even when I looked at the next role for me, was I didn't want to do anything that made people scroll on their phones. Like, I really wanted to. Something that was like in real life.
Human. Yeah.
It's exactly. But still, I think from, you know, things that I'm looking at and really fascinated by, that is one trend and one, it's not a trend. It's just sort of the way the world is. Massive. And that bears, you know, people being aware of.
Yeah, little Ready Player One is what we're pointed at, hey?
Exactly.
Oh my goodness. Well, we have been talking with Amy Freelander Hoffman, Chief Business Officer of Liquid Death, calling from an escape room at their new corporate offices. Amy, if people wanted to learn more about you or the brand, where would they go?
Yeah. I mean, I would say you can certainly go to www.liquiddeath.com. Better, although, follow us on Instagram or TikTok. Mm-hmm. I would say those are probably the two places that would be best to follow us. We are now the number 7th beverage brand on those platforms and social.
Nice. I think I saw that.
Yep. Pretty exciting. So those would probably be the two best places. And then always someone's welcome to hit me up on LinkedIn.
Great. Oh, well, Amy, thank you so much for your time today and for all that you're doing. I have a feeling that we could probably talk about a whole lot more, but I appreciate the time that you've given me and everybody listening today. Really looking forward to what you're up to next. You've piqued my interest and watching how you guys continue to change the industry. So thank you everybody for listening today. Have a great rest of your day. Make sure you catch us next time. And Amy, have a great rest of your day too.
Thanks so much. It was a pleasure.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you haven't already, be sure to click subscribe and share with your network. Until next time, be well and do gooder.